What year was Miller Furniture founded?
Miller Furniture was founded by my great-grandfather in 1927.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. 27. So you're past 90 years now. You're almost coming up on 100 years.
Yep. Celebrating our 91st anniversary starting in August.
Oh, that's amazing. Yep. What do you do to celebrate 91 years? Like, if you were married for 91, what's the thing that you give each other?
I don't know if anybody's ever been married 91 years.
No, I don't think so either. You might have to go back to the biblical times. So, yeah, that's a long time. What did the furniture business look like then?
Well, the furniture business was definitely not as you bought what you saw. There was not the capabilities to do all the custom ordering that we do nowadays. Mm-hmm. It was people would walk in a store, they would find a couch that they liked, and then in it went, and you'd get it delivered that day or the next day, mm-hmm. Usually by the store owner or, they were smaller, much more close family businesses.
Yeah, 1927, your great-grandfather, was he born here in the United States?
Yes, he was. He was second generation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So your family, where did they come from?
Germany.
Yeah.
Yep.
With a name like that.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yes, the Miller family in Belleville, Illinois, mm-hmm. and the surrounding farming areas there. Big German community, and that's where they settled.
There's a lot of great German families here in St. Louis. I mean, there's so many great family businesses, too, that have the roots from Germany that we've heard about on this program.
Yeah, you ought to see our customer list. It's like going into Bavaria.
So your grandfather and your grandmother was Emma?
Great-grandmother, yes.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Yes.
And was she involved in the business at all? Do you know?
She would get the occasional phone call. Hey, we've got 5 customers in the store, and it's just me and Roland. And, and then usually by the time Emma got there, the crowd had dispersed. But she would get the occasional call in.
So you guys focused on American-made all-wood furniture.
Yes, yes.
All wood.
Absolutely, yes. Solid wood. There's a lot of the imports are made from particle board and veneers, mm-hmm. and there's also a huge amount of damage. You know, if you think about how far it has to come to get here, and it's mass-produced, there's not as much customization, high rate of damage, and after about 2005, it became very hard to find American-made suppliers. Mm. That was a challenge. Many of the American factories, there's some great books written about this. The best, in my opinion, is Factory Man by Beth Macy, mm-hmm. and it chronicles what happened in the Carolina and Virginias between the mid-90s and the mid-2000s. The United States lost nearly a $50 billion industry in that time period.
How about that? You know, I started to talk to some people around the radio station here. I talked to Charlie Brennan. He says he buys his furniture from you guys, mm-hmm. and he says really high quality, great furniture. I think he said he bought a couch from out there.
Yep.
Yeah, the interesting thing with Miller Furniture, so purchasing and selling, you know, really high American-made. You're right, because people tend to want to go to the stores where they assemble it themselves and bring it home. It's just not the same, though. Mm-hmm. You might be able to save a couple of bucks by putting it in a box and loading it up, but you're right, high rate of damage. So what would be the difference between the people that are going and wanting to assemble their own furniture versus what they would find, you know, American-made in your store?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the longevity, mm-hmm. and so we feature a lot of classic designs and things that will never go out of style, and then you can customize it to match existing pieces in your home. Maybe you've got a nice antique piece of furniture that your mom gave to you or your grandmother has handed down, and you don't want to replace that, but you would like some new kitchen chairs. Well, you can buy a new dining room table or kitchen table and chairs to match that antique piece. That's just not going to be an option with any of the import brands.
Yeah, I noticed that when people move or... In my example, when my grandmother passed away and we're going through her house and looking at the things, all the furniture stayed. But whenever you see someone moving and they have a dumpster out, it's all that made furniture that gets tossed. And it's the good stuff that stays. And that's the kind of thing that has longevity. When you go to sometimes I'll go around to garage sales and you'll look and you'll sometimes see dates on there. Are you pretty good at dating furniture? Is that like a hobby where you can go and almost identify when a piece was made?
I think my dad would do a better job of that. Yeah. I mean, he could look at a Tell City or Thomasville set from the 70s and probably tell you the SKU numbers. I mean, he's nicknamed the furniture encyclopedia amongst some of the sales reps that have called on us.
I mean, people love specific eras because they're looking for that specific look, and that's a pretty important thing for a lot of people. So 1927, that was your great-grandfather. That's a little weird time because the Great Depression was right around the corner. Do you know what it was like for the company at that period of time?
It's unbelievable. Starting a business at the height of the Roaring Twenties and then somehow managing to survive the Great Depression. I actually saw one of the old Miller Furniture payment books that great-grandpa John and Roland would have handed a customer. Customer bought a bedroom set for $264 in 1928. Now, they finished payment on it in 1933. They paid about $10 a month for a few years, and then between 30 and 32, there was just no payments. So I guess we were one of the first people to offer 5 years with no interest.
So the record keeping, you guys have a lot of your old records from then.
You know, customers will actually bring them to us.
Yeah.
Some of the old stuff, there's, you know, Miller Furniture ashtrays and rulers and, you know, different things like that. The payment books and old invoices, it's great. Customers will wander in and say, you know, this was at my dad's house when we were cleaning it out, and I thought you might want it.
Wow. Was your grandfather involved at this time, or was this prior to him being born or old enough to work?
He was much younger than Roland. So in 1927, he would only been 8 years old.
I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he may have had some hand in it, but not really an active role at that time at Miller Furniture.
Right. Yeah. He would help out, I'm sure, when he could, and probably had to get on the delivery truck as soon as he was strong enough to pick up furniture. Pretty much that is the case for all of us.
Like you, is that and the same route that you went through?
Yep. First delivery I made, I was 16 years old with my Uncle Roger.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you always know you were going to get into the furniture company, the family business?
Absolutely not.
No.
No. It was great that my parents did not pressure me into it. I had the luxury of trying to figure out what I was going to do.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, it seems like the different family businesses we talk to on this program, this is almost a certainty when you talk to a certain generation. There was no intention to get into the family business, but somehow they find their way in there. That's a pretty common trait.
It's a very common, and I think part of that is due to parents not pressuring the next generation to come into the business. They give them latitude. Mm-hmm. They give them room to make up their own mind. And parents have to be very careful because every night at the dinner table, a lot of families talk about business, what happened that day, and they're sending messages to the next generation when they don't realize they're broadcasting a message most every day when they talk about the business at the family dinner table. Mm-hmm. And so they have to be careful about what messages they send to the next generation because they're soaking these up for 10 or 12 or 15 years. And most children say, I don't want to join the family business. I want to do something else. Mm-hmm. And then until they go to college and come back, they realize, hey, this is part of my legacy. This is where I need to be.
When we come back, more with Mark Miller from Miller Furniture on the business of family business. It's presented by CMA Consulting. And as you heard, 2/3 of family businesses do not make the generational transition, meaning when it's time for a family business owner to step down, most family businesses, they start to identify the next owner, maybe develop a successor, could be within the family, could be without. But very few actively work to unify the next generation. Let me tell you about CMA Consulting in the Business of Family Business Ownership Program. They have these critical topics set up for family businesses to support each other, to support effective family business ownership and unity in the next generation, with experts providing content on specific topics that apply to your family business. If this sounds like something that could help your family business, don't hesitate. Just reach out to Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. CMAconsult.com is the website, or you can give them a call if you feel more comfortable that way. It's 314-721-1860. When was the last time your family members discussed how to apply insights into the family business? Don't wait any longer. 314-721-1860. That's the number for CMA Consulting. Telling the story of family businesses from across the St. Louis region, this is the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting, and Dan Bean from CMA joins us with Mark Miller from Miller Furniture. And if you have a family business story you would like told on this program, it's easy. Reach out to Dan Bean. CMAconsult.com is the website for you to find out more. At Miller Furniture, Mark, you said you were into baseball, but your grandfather was into baseball, too.
Absolutely, yes. He had a short but very storied career. He came up in 1941 with the Tigers at the age of 22.
The Detroit Tigers.
Yes, Detroit. Yeah. Yes. And unfortunately, you know, obviously World War II happened, and he was in the Army Reserve stationed in Jefferson Barracks. Mm-hmm. And he got to play a little bit of baseball while in the service. But really, he told me that he was never in the peak baseball shape that he was before the war. But he did play in 1945, complete season, which the most legendary thing he did was pitch nearly 20 innings in one game. July 21st, 1945. No one has pitched that long since. 19 and two-thirds innings, gave up one unearned run.
Wow.
Amazing story. And Detroit went on to win the World Series in 1945.
Who did they play against?
The Chicago Cubs.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah. At the time of his death, he was the last living person to have pitched against the Chicago Cubs in a World Series game.
Wow. How about that? Yeah. So the stories that your grandfather must have had, was he pretty well known in the community for his baseball history?
Absolutely. I mean, he was from Belleville Township. I mean, he struck 33 batters out in a 13-inning game, and that put him on the map. And,
yeah.
So he was well known. And just my grandpa's personality, he was the nicest, just had a kind spirit about him. And baseball players, they were heroes back then. And to be able to make it all the way to the major leagues and then to win a World Series and to do some really good things for that, you know, for that team and contribute, he was a real hero, and people looked up to him, and he was just very gracious and humble about all that baseball experience.
I hope someone kept his jersey somewhere along the line.
Yeah, I've got his spring training jacket, too. It's like a Letterman, Detroit Tigers Letterman's jacket.
Oh, that's awesome.
Really cool.
Those jerseys were itchy back then, weren't they? They weren't made with the most breathable materials. Yeah,
probably 100% wool.
So how did your grandfather get into the furniture business?
Well, like all of us baseball players, eventually you get cut. You know, you get injured and you get cut. And so in 1946, they sent him to AAA. He didn't get a chance to play for Detroit in 46.
So he went the World Series before, went 19-some innings, giving up, and then he immediately goes down to the minors the next season?
That is correct. Wow. Yes, that's how they did. You know, some other players had come back from the service, and it was opening day. They were playing the national anthem, and they said, Les, the general manager wants to see you. Mm-hmm. They sent him to AAA.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
Is this, I don't know where the AAA was. Was it Toledo still then?
Or? Buffalo.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he hurt his shoulder about halfway through the season and was never the same after that. He pitched until 1948, which after that, it was time to, you know, get a full-time job. And that is when he entered back into Miller Furniture.
Gotcha. So what was his role at Miller Furniture at the time?
Well, his oldest brother, Roland, was really Great-Grandpa John's right-hand man.
Right.
And so Grandpa, I think, did a lot in the warehouse. And, you know, he was around to help, but John and Roland ran the business, and he was there to do what he could. That was mainly his role.
Yeah. Did they use any of his celebrity to help with the advertiser or anything with Miller Furniture?
Nobody advertised until my dad got into the business.
Oh, is that right?
No. It was all just done on word of mouth.
Wow.
In those days. And so I guess it's, you know, a little bit part of the kind of the stoic nature of the German farmer kind of culture that my great-grandpa got out of. I mean, advertising would have been almost like bragging.
That's surprising to me because I think that may have been a missed opportunity. He would have been a known person in the community. I got to imagine people would have came up just to say hi to him, too, at a time like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes. And he always liked talking with people, and everybody got along with him. So, yes, people would come by, and they knew, you know, they'd go and meet Les Miller there.
Well, how important is that, the community outreach for Miller Furniture?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, without that, you're just a number. You know, you need to be a part of the community. And when, both in Belleville for our entire existence and since we moved out to Lake St. Louis, just being a part of Chamber of Commerce, sponsoring events, sponsoring teams, when people walk in your door and they want a donation for a silent auction, you know, find out what it's all about and give them a donation. You know, it's just something that we feel very strongly about. And my dad certainly passed that down to me.
Yeah. So what did the ownership of Miller Furniture look like? So it would have been your great-grandfather, and he was a, was he the sole owner, or did he have any, like Roland, did he have any ownership at the time?
Well, it was all very informal in those days. So my great-grandfather, when he would have retired, you know, then it would have been, okay, well, it's half Roland's and it's half Les's.
Gotcha.
And then after, so Roland was very instrumental in the business, and unfortunately, he passed away at the age of 50 years old in 1960. And at which point in time, my grandpa and my grandma had to, you know, buy out their half. Mm-hmm. And they did. And then my grandfather and became, you know, 100% sole owner. At which point in time, my grandmother, Peggy Miller, went to work and was very much the person that ran Miller Furniture until my dad took over.
Right. And your dad is Les's son.
Yes, youngest son.
Youngest son. Mm-hmm. How many siblings there?
Two older brothers.
Yeah.
His oldest brother, Les Jr., was 9 years older, and Roger was 7 years older. And Roger had already established himself as a very good basketball coach at Belleville West. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he was going to teach and coach basketball, and he's a he was just inducted into the Illinois Coaches Hall of Fame.
How about that?
And he was he's an amazing coach. Incredible game planner.
So what did you learn from your dad, sports-wise? Let's start there.
Work when other people aren't working. That's what he always told me. I was trying to, I played baseball and basketball, and he thought, okay, well, if you want to get better than this person, you got to work when they're working, but you got to think when they're at home or when they're resting or whatever, that's when you need to practice, because that's when you will gain on them. And so that was something that I always took.
Yeah, that's a very good bit of advice. You could probably transfer that over to the business world, too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Sports and business go hand in hand very much. I have a million analogies between pitching and sales and promotions. There's, you can go on and on.
We'll learn some more about the family founders of Miller Furniture. Mark Miller joins us in studio on The Business of Family Business. It's presented by CMA Consulting. I'm your host, Ryan Ranker. We're also joined with Dan Beaton from CMA Consulting. We'll continue our conversation next. The Business of Family Business continues. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, telling the stories of family businesses across the region. Thank you for joining us for this one. It's Mark Miller from Miller Furniture, along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. Your grandma was active in the business. Peggy, what was her name, right?
Yes, Peggy Miller.
So, and there was a time when you mentioned that, was Roland's wife involved in the company for a while, too?
No.
Not really?
No.
Nope. She just had maybe some ownership stake?
Yes, and so they had to, you know, when Roland passed, they had to
basically... That's when it all happened right
correct,
there.
Correct, and buy that part of the family out.
I see. So at that point, your grandfather, Les, had sole ownership of the company.
Mm-hmm.
I see. And then your father started getting involved maybe a little earlier than he planned because of the untimely, weird... What was that called again?
Guillain-Barré.
Guillain-Barré.
Yeah, and the only reason they were even able to diagnose him is his brother... His brother, Uncle Bud, we call him, he was a doctor out in California, and so he was up to date on, you know, what are some new diseases out there, and they called him and said, I think you might have Guillain-Barré.
Wow.
Yeah, so luckily, Grandpa Les made a complete recovery and lived a, you know, a long and happy life. Up, you know, he was 93 years old.
Long enough to close out the old Tiger Stadium one year.
Yes.
When they get to go back in the late 90s there.
That was quite a day.
How long was your grandfather off his feet?
I'd say within 3 to 4 months, he was back to work.
Yeah. That's amazing how that works out.
Yeah.
But that really was a crash course for your father.
Mm-hmm.
That he had a lot that on his shoulders at that time.
Yeah. I mean, when you're 20 years old and then all of a sudden that's, you know, all of a sudden you've got a lot more responsibilities. But it was really a blessing because, one, my grandfather luckily recovered, but two, it piqued his interest in the family business and he changed his major.
Yeah. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, we see this sometimes. Emergencies come up where other family members have to step in, and that really is a make-or-break moment for a lot of companies.
Absolutely, and sometimes that is what has to happen. There is a dire emergency. It's unplanned, unanticipated, and somebody in the family has to step into the role on an emergency, unprepared. They just got to step in and do the best they can, and that's what happened here, and it seems like it turned out well.
So how did your father gain some ownership in the company? Was it at a point where your grandfather, Les, just was ready to retire after he returned, or was there something else that happened there?
No, that's pretty much it. It was that, you know, if Roger and Les Jr. didn't have any interest in the business. Mm-hmm. And so my grandfather, the furniture business was never his real true passion, mm-hmm. and he enjoyed other things in life. And so, you know, when my dad showed an interest, they were certainly wanting to then pass it along. And,
right.
and you know, dad began buying out the business.
Right. So that's when your dad really stepped up and mm-hmm. when his other brother, sister said no.
Yeah, pretty much. Once he got out of college is
yeah, that was
when
it
all started.
Let me ask you this too, Dan, being from CMA Consulting. Sometimes you have siblings, they're interested in some sort of ownership in the company. Sometimes there's no interest. In situations like that, how often does that happen where it seems like there's only one of the siblings that are interested in stepping up in the family company?
It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens more frequently in smaller businesses mm-hmm. because there's not as much revenue, not as much profit to support multiple families.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's going to happen, it happens more often in smaller businesses. It happens sometimes when there's only one person active in the business mm-hmm. and other siblings or cousins are not active. The one thing it does do, it avoids a lot of potential pitfalls for a family business because more siblings, more cousins who are owners, particularly if some are active and some are inactive, there's all kinds of potential squabbles about distributions and how profits are handled and who gets salary and who gets benefits and who doesn't. So it's one way to avoid a lot of potential sources of tension in a family business
yeah.
to just have one owner at the next generation.
So what year did your dad take over?
It would have been 1974.
What did Miller Furniture look like in 74?
Well, we were still there in 1004 East Main Street, mm-hmm. where you can find us today. It was a two-story building. So the bottom floor, and there was a few other, there was an art gallery in there as well. But the second floor and two of the bays were Miller Furniture Company, but the property was shared with some other vendors. Well, and it nearly all went up in smoke, literally, in 1978.
Just a couple years after your dad took over.
Correct.
Yeah. What happened?
So my grandparents, Les and Peggy, they were down in Louisiana on vacation. So my dad's 25 years old at the time and gets a call in the middle of the night. The building's on fire.
Oh.
And it was not only that, we had for years tried to buy the building. Mm-hmm. The building was originally owned by the pharmacist who okay. built it back in the 20s. So we were in the process. We had made an offer on the building. The offer was accepted, and we were supposed to close at the end of the month.
Okay.
And then on March 23rd, so a week before
right.
closing date, the building burns down.
Wow. That complicates things.
Yes. And my dad said that by 10 o'clock the next morning,
mm-hmm.
we were operating out of our warehouse.
No, oh, okay.
We had two warehouses at the time. And so it was, you know, get what was salvageable. And we had inventory in the warehouse, too. And, you know, that was our presence.
What caused the fire? Do you know?
Oh, there's a lot. My grandma had a theory about that. The fellow with the art gallery, you know, who knows? Nothing has been, it's unexplained fire, but
yeah.
she had her theories. The insurance money that we got mm-hmm. was not enough to rebuild the store. So we ended up having to you know, get loans from the bank to, mm-hmm. and we did an expansion as well. So there was, it made our overhead go way up. So all of a sudden, instead of having to do X amount of dollars to be profitable, it was X times 1.5.
Yeah. That's one of those unexpected things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can try to factor in the unexpected, but then there's some things that happen you really can't.
Yeah.
So what did your dad do in order to keep the company afloat?
Well, if you've ever met him, you know he's tenacious. You know,
yeah.
he will outwork anybody. And so, like I said, by 10 o'clock the next morning, it was like, this is what we have. This is where we're going to operate out of our warehouse until we can rebuild the store.
Yeah.
And so they got going on that process. And by August 1st, we opened up for the anniversary sale
mm-hmm.
that year with a new storefront. And, you know, they were still putting the pieces together a little bit, but it was enough. And my dad said we had a fantastic anniversary sale. Great brands like the Tell City. I mean, Tell City was a legendary company out of Indiana.
Yeah.
Made solid hard rock maple furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the best-selling collections in the history of the furniture business were made right there in Tell City, Indiana.
It's what your dad said in sports where, you know, when everyone else goes home and rest, you're still out there practicing. You're trying to get an extra leg up on the competition. That was your dad at that point. He was trying to figure out how to continue on when everyone else was resting. He was working harder. It's kind of like the advice he gave you. He was continuing to go on.
Yeah.
So what happened that year? At the end of the year, you do the anniversary sale. Mm-hmm. And did things start to look good after that, or was it still a struggle?
Well, sales picked up and yeah. we began to grow. And like I said, he started advertising. He was the first person to run ads. Mm-hmm. And we also got into the mattress business as well. So not just furniture, but mattress sales. Mm-hmm. And so it continued to grow the revenue to the point where we thought, hey, you know, let's expand and put another store out on the west end of Belleville.
Oh, okay. So the Miller Furniture expanded in what year?
1982.
So this is just a few years after the fire. It's not that far removed from it.
Correct.
Okay. How did that go?
We were open out there for 9 years, mm-hmm. three separate three-year lease periods. And when my dad looked at our customer mailing list, mm-hmm. he noticed that everybody was from the East End and there's a whole nother market out west. And there was a few furniture stores out there as well. So he went, after one went under, we went into that building and opened up a furniture store out there to kind of expand our footprint.
We'll continue with Mark Miller one last time from Miller Furniture on this weekend's edition of the Business of Family Business. Also in studio with us is Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. And in many ways, family businesses are like a lot of other businesses, but imagine what it's like when a business owner is ready to make the decision to transition either into retirement, or maybe it's just time for an ownership or leadership transition in the business. They look at the next generation. What are you doing to make sure that next generation is ready? CMA Consulting, that's where they step in. They have a multidisciplinary team that helps family businesses unify the next generation and develop them to be effective owners. If that sounds like something you can benefit from, it doesn't hurt to give Dan Bean a call at CMA. It's a no-obligation, complimentary discussion of your upcoming transition or any other benefits that they offer. Just give them a call at 314-721-1860. Or if you want to check them out on the web, cmaconsult.com. They have tax experts and talent experts in accounting, legal, banking, risk management. It's not as easy as just handing over the keys. You need to make sure you could mitigate those odds of a successful generational transition to keep that family harmony. Again, what does it hurt for you to call and ask the question, hey, Dan, I heard your program on KMOX. What can you do to help our business? The website again is cmaconsult.com, or if you want to give them a call over the phone, 314-721-1860 for CMA Consulting. Welcome back to the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. We're joined in studio with both Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program, also Mark Miller from Miller Furniture. You're continuing to grow. The 90s are around. Mm-hmm. How old are you at the, like, let's say 1991-ish or in that range?
I was born in 82, so yeah. I'm, you know, 9 years old. And I remember going to we called it the West Store. I remember going there, and I remember the sound of the grandfather clocks.
Yeah.
That was the sound of Miller Furniture. We did a great business with Howard Miller grandfather clocks. When you walked into one of our stores, you'd always hear the clocks ticking, and then every few minutes you'd hear the beautiful chimes of either Westminster or Ave Maria.
Yeah. Isn't that something? That it's mm-hmm. those things you'll never forget your entire mm-hmm. life. It's those little sounds like that. That is probably something a lot of customers remember, too. It's amazing how sometimes sights and smells can take you right back to certain
Absolutely.
Parts, and they could be associated that way. So you were, let's say in the 90s, you were starting to get older. You weren't quite in high school yet, but what was the conversation like behind the scenes when you were at home? Was your dad always talking about the business, or what was it like there in the home life?
You know, we liked to ask him about the goofy customers that would come in. You know, there was a few locals in Belleville that kind of lived around the store, and we'd say, hey, did you see the ice cream man? You know, there was just a couple of guys that we enjoyed hearing the funny stories about the customers, but nuts and bolts business, what was selling, things like that. You know, we never really talked about that.
And your dad went through another rough time in the 90s. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, there was some, I guess with the bank and the line of credit, there was some issues with that.
Yeah, there's, you know, it went from, I believe it was the bank, the Belleville Bank, mm-hmm. You know, with mergers and things like that. I think it eventually became Nations.
Okay.
But one of the banks, one of the larger banks took it over, basically pulled the line of credit.
Mm.
And so all of a sudden you've got to, you know, you need working capital. And so that was a big challenge right there. And there were some hard times, especially in the late 90s. And eventually, you know, we found another local bank to do business with, and thank you for them. And we're able to get back on our feet, and sales were able to go up between the years of 98 and 2002.
At that time, you said you had really no interest in joining the family business. Yeah. You were just going off and you're looking. What were you trying to pursue at that time?
Like a lot of teenagers, I didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
I really didn't have a clue. I did well in history classes, and I loved sports, and I, you know, I wanted to play Major League Baseball. It was what I wanted to do, and you know, go to school. I enjoyed school. I always did. I did pretty well. I wasn't a straight A student, but I was a pretty good student. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my sisters, older sisters as well, they're in college as well. So, mm-hmm. And not to mention the fact that my dad had two bouts with cancer right around that same time.
Oh, wow.
And so it would have been, looking back on it, it was an incredibly trying time. You know, very easily could have gone the other way.
Sounds like your dad's a pretty amazing guy to juggle all of those things.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it takes a certain kind of person to be able to survive those years, but he did, and he made it out the other end, and things are fantastic.
Great. Your sisters, did they have any interest in Miller Furniture?
No. Yeah, I never did.
They ever go out on deliveries?
No.
What's the heaviest piece of furniture?
There is 325-pound credenza from the Bellagio collection by Hooker Furniture,
mm-hmm.
and it is in the front showroom at our Belleville store.
Yeah,
and it's about 76 inches wide and 45 inches tall, big ornate piece of furniture. I carried it in about 4 years ago, and it's nobody wants to move it.
Yeah. Pay for delivery with a piece like that.
Yes. Yeah, that's the biggest thing there is. All of these reclining sofas with power lumbar support and adjustable headrest, they're very, very comfortable.
Uh-huh.
However, they've gone from about 180 to 275 in last 5 years.
Isn't that a good thing? I thought the heavier it weighed, the more quality it was.
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. I always thought that was the thing. When people try to, you know, when you look at something, sometimes you can say, okay, if it weighs more, it seems like they may be putting a little bit more, maybe using some higher quality materials on it.
That's a decent general rule of thumb.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little nuance in that definition. But yeah, if you lift up the side of a couch and it feels like a feather, you might think again before purchasing that one.
So you went off to school. When did you actually get interest in the company?
So after I graduated college.
Mm-hmm. Which year was that?
2004.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, in between those, in between minor league season that I played in the Frontier League for Gateway Grizzlies and Mid-Missouri Mavericks.
Cool.
And
what position?
Right-handed pitcher.
Ah,
yep,
okay.
Just like Grandpa.
Great.
And yeah, after that, I went to work upstairs. And my dad sent me and our best salesperson at the time to the High Point Furniture Market in North Carolina. And that's when I really realized, I think I could be pretty good at this.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. This is a people business. I enjoy maximizing the showroom, finding the best vendors. There's thousands of vendors out there that want to sell us furniture.
Yeah.
Thousands. You can pick from there's any number of them, and at different price points. And being able to take your store space and find the right mix that your customers are going to respond to, and finding a way to promote that and get people in that are going to like what you've got, that whole equation is very fascinating to me. And I didn't realize how much I was going to like it until that High Point Market. And ever since then, I've been hooked.
At that point, was your dad thinking about, well, maybe one day I want to retire? Or was he still like so gung-ho in the company that it wasn't even on his mind?
Oh, absolutely not on his radar at all. No. I mean, there's no thoughts of retirement or anything like that. No, but basically, as you grow as a company, eventually you can no longer do everything.
Yeah.
And so it was, I tried to find the things that he didn't have time to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to do those things because that's added value.
Right.
You know, you either try to generate more revenue or you try to figure out how to keep revenue from leaking out of the back end. So stop the leakage, get more revenue. And it's a very general, broad job description, but that's how I always saw my job description.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, to me that kind of sounds like on-the-job training. So you have a company that's expanding and you have an owner that has a lot on his plate. you have the next generation come in and they get to take over some of those roles, maybe get to expand the company. That's a good way to ease someone into maybe an ownership or a leadership position in a company.
Absolutely. A very good experience for somebody to come in and have their own scope of responsibility, to be given their own opportunities, to be given resources, and to be able to demonstrate what they can do with those resources, mm-hmm. and to be held accountable for explaining how they've used those resources to pursue that opportunity, mm-hmm. and so to see what kind of return they were able to generate.
Mark, you're a fourth generation.
Mm-hmm.
Is your dad still actively working?
Yes, he's there every day. He's working right now. He'll be there tomorrow, the day after that. I mean, he works 7 days a week.
Yeah.
We're closed on Christmas, Easter, and Thanksgiving. So that's 362 possible work days. I would think he works 360 to 362 a year.
Does he ever take a vacation?
Occasionally. Yeah. Not very often, though. No.
I see. With your dad working 7 days a week, what's your relationship with him and how you work with each other?
Oh, it's great. I mean, it really always has been. One of the things that's very important is we always had baseball as an out of work bond. I mean, he would catch me as a pitcher. I need a catcher. I can't just, you know, I could throw a ball against a wall, but you need a target. Mm-hmm. And so up until 2015, he was catching bullpens for me, and we would, you know, after work we'd go to the baseball field at SWIC, Southwest Illinois Junior College. I played my first 2 years of college there,
okay.
and Neil Fiallo was nice enough to always let us use the field, and I'd rake up the mound after we're done. But, you know, I'd go there, and we'd play catch, and it didn't matter whether we sold stuff that day, whether deliveries got messed up, if things were perfect. You know, we were able to just enjoy and do something that we loved. And, I mean, we could probably still go out there and play long toss now, but I don't know if there's enough Epsom salt in the St. Louis area to help us recover at this point.
How many employees at Miller Furniture today?
We're right around 30.
Oh, that's great. What do you say your key to the success over the years would be?
Our recent success is, I feel like we're at 85 years. For the last 5 years, we've become an overnight success. So it took 85 years. But to find the thing that differentiated us that would allow people to come into Miller Furniture, and that is the commitment to better quality goods, primarily American-made goods, mm-hmm. which means solid wood furniture, means catalyzed varnish finishes. And what that means in a nutshell is you don't get water rings on your nightstand on your table. It's a special finish that they're using that makes it incredibly durable, mm-hmm. and then the ability to customize. So the made in the USA, the higher quality story. And that spawned out of customers. Customers mm-hmm. would come into our store, and our salespeople would start talking about the furniture that we have, and this made in the United States, and people liked that. And mm-hmm. they were willing to invest a little bit more in the better quality goods.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started out with, okay, we had a couple tables and chairs, and now we've expanded that to, at our Lake St. Louis store that we opened, it's 100% our dining rooms, kitchens, bedroom furniture, mm-hmm. 100% Amish made or American factory built, all solid wood furniture.
Wow. That makes a big difference. Really makes a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 89% of the wood furniture sold in this country is imported. Mm-hmm. Most of that furniture is made of particle board and veneers.
Mm-hmm.
So when you walk into another furniture store and then you walk into Miller Furniture, you are seeing something completely different mm-hmm. from what's out there in the marketplace, and that has been a real catalyst for our growth recently.
Dan, being from CMA Consulting, you heard the story of Miller Furniture here and the passed down through the generations. What are some of your impressions?
You know, it's a story of a first-generation American who founded a business in 1927. The family persevered through the Great Depression and a fire. There was always at least one family member at each generation who was willing to come into and lead the business.
Mm-hmm.
Only one owner can help avoid many potential risks, but it also has a downside in that there's fewer informed confidants mm-hmm. to work with in evaluating and planning for the business. And finally, the importance of finding your sweet spot in the marketplace. And for Miller Furniture, it seems to be the American all-wood furniture, mm-hmm. and that has done great things for the company and led to rapid growth in the last 5 years. So it seems like Mark and the business have a very bright future.
Yeah. Mark Miller, Miller Furniture, thanks for coming in, sharing your story today on the Business of Family Business.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for the invitation.